You're listening to Sportsnet.ca Soccer Central Podcast with James Sharman, Brendan Dunlop, and Thomas Dobby.
Guess who just got back today? Them wild-eyed boys that had been away. Haven't changed. Haven't much to say. But I still think them cats are crazy. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. I said the boys are back in town. Hello. This is not...
It wasn't cheesy at all.
This is not the Footy Show podcast.
Hello, old friend.
Hello, old friend. It's been a while. I've seen you here. Listen, we couldn't afford or have any rights to actually air the song.
No.
Courtesy Thin Lizzy. Thank you, Frank Zappa. All right?
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, they do. Hello, everyone. It's been a while. But we're back. I'm James Sharman. To my left is Thomas Dobby, formerly producer of The Footy Show, formerly producer of Soccer Central. Now he's, God knows what he's doing.
I'm being interrogated under these lights under here. It's all hot and bothered. I feel like, I'm sweating.
That's exactly what a podcast should feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if it's nerves. No. This is great.
Brendan Dunlop's opposite me.
I am, with a giant board of things to screw up with. So any audio issues...
How many jobs are you doing?
Do you have? I'm doing three jobs.
Jobs back there. Three jobs.
You know, this will be like the Footy Show podcast, right?
Yes.
However, it will be without the swearing, we've been told, informed. It's going to be so hard.
James, why would you do that?
It's not my choice.
90 seconds in, but you just told them. 90 seconds in, now they've unsubscribed already. Probably. They've turned it off.
It's all about the F-bombs.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. John Molinaro's here in the room. Oh, hey, John.
Hey.
J-Mo will be joining us later to talk some MLS. He's also overseeing this. He's our guardian. He will, if the odd expletive is dropped,
he's the one that will punch us in the face. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly how
he's looking at me, too. Yeah. There's been a few emails already. For some reason, I've been picked out as one who used to swear. But
no idea why.
We'll keep it down.
But it has been a long time. Of course, there is no KJ, as you may have noticed, most of you know already. But that is the business. People move on. KJ has died. No, he hasn't. I'm joking. He's still on, mate, everyone. Don't worry. But
yes.
As the biz changes, people move on to different places. All right. Later in today's show, we'll talk some Spanish football with Sid Lowe, some Italian football with Paolo Bandini. So it's going to be a very full show, as per usual.
Like a podcast you've never heard of before.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally
it's so original, the format, I think. Don't you?
I think so, too. A bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And welcome to our new listeners, because it's a different platform, and hopefully we have a lot of new people as well. So you don't know us yet. You will. You'll love us at times. You'll hate us at times.
A lot, probably.
But just be there.
Listen,
we'll
yes.
be like family. Like the three of us.
Well, I mean, the initial divorce happened over a year ago now, when Dobby and Dunlop left me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was back in July, wasn't it?
Then you couldn't stand your life without us.
It was
so
awful.
You had to come
clawing
over to us.
Clamoring to come back. And finally, you took
tears
me back.
In his eyes.
Yeah, and here we are. And it's as dysfunctional a marriage as it ever has been.
Been working for free since March, James. I don't know how you did it.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, listen, so we get to the football. I guess we should, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of why people are listening. Or
nah, maybe.
Potentially.
Yeah, maybe. We'll start with, surprisingly enough, the Premier League. Again, long-time listeners might be surprised by the order of events here. But that is the league
Englishman
that we love.
You, James.
Yes. Why would an Englishman be saying that to me?
I don't know.
Yeah. Be like an Italian or Portuguese guy.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Right.
Those accents will come out later in the show.
Oh, I dare say they will.
Yeah.
This weekend, who knew that, you know, we'd be talking a year and a half later, or a few months later, and there's no Fergie at Manchester United, and we're talking David Moyes. And it's been a rather tumultuous start to his era at Old Trafford. This weekend, they tie Southampton 1-1. United concede a late goal as well. But, boy, is this Southampton team... I mean, 3 goals against all time this season. That back four, Arda Buric has been outstanding once again. And, you know, that ruthlessness, that fear factor that once United had at Old Trafford, it ain't there right now. I don't care what Moyes might say post-match. It ain't there.
You just hit on it, James. And, I mean, there was some trouble watching the second half of that game. But
There might have been in this country.
Anyways, you know, you talked about Southampton there, and all credit to them. That's fine, but... Let's be honest, the story here is Manchester United and their failure to lock this game down. And, you know, that intimidation factor and that, you know, prestige of Old Trafford, and it is out the window. And all Southampton are a nice team playing good stuff, and, you know, they might have a great season and finish in, you know, the top 10. They're not going to stay where they are right now, which is, you know, in the top 5 of the Premier League. But Manchester United, in previous years, put this team away, and they did not have any of that killer instinct and that drive and to finish it off. And they look a team that is dysfunctional, and you know, to concede at that juncture against that team in your stadium like that, I don't know who that team is. No. It really does not make any sense to me. And I really thought that they would bury Southampton this weekend and, you know, put it behind them and start to march on. And, you know, just like that, you're nursing a one-goal lead and it was, you know, comfortable enough. That one goal changes everything, because all of a sudden you get a draw out of it, and the crisis level, we can actually call it close enough to a crisis.
And you think so? This early in the
season? I really do think
in.
So, James.
Listen to all the things Dobby mentioned. They might be wearing Red Devil shirts, but do they look like United
this
at
is
all?
This is a team that won the title last season. Didn't really change much. There's more competitors because you know that Chelsea are, you know, with Mourinho, more full. Man City are. But you look at the way Arsenal are playing. You look at the way Tottenham are playing. You look at everything factoring in. Liverpool are playing well.
It is not
beyond the realm of possibility that Manchester United do not make the Champions League next season. I really think there's a massive overreaction here.
I do. And I know what you're saying here. And there's issues which I think go deeper than David Moyes. The back four, for example, it is not good. Even with Rio and Vidic there. Rio is slower than ever before.
But Sir Alex Ferguson won the title with this group last season. Right. And maybe it was on the last legs,
I mean, with Rio in particular. Yeah. Now, this weekend, of course, it was Evans in there with Jones. Now, when is Phil Jones going to actually emerge as an
18 million pound player?
Yeah, precisely. We're waiting. And it might still happen, but I still think it's an overreaction to a certain point. There are still good points to this team. We're seeing Rooney happy, playing really good football once again. Haven't seen that for 2 years. RVP's rounding into form as well at just the right
time.
That's
the scary part, though, that they have those guys. They have the best player in the league in Robin Van Persie, who, okay, has had a little bit of injury setbacks this season already. Rooney playing great, one of the top players in the Premier League. But they're still not getting the results that they need.
But that's because this is a David Moyes team. Everton would always, you know, wouldn't wake up until December and then finish in the top six and just off the top four. So that means United are going to win the title by 18 points.
Inevitably.
By the time that they turn things around. You didn't mention the best player in the world, Adnan Januzaj.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Obviously, that the hype machine's gone out of control once again, as it does with any young player emerging with a good game. But he is very good. And in that first half, that ball to Rooney and the RVP goal was... A cliche is top draw, but boy, that was something pretty special. And that wasn't just it. He almost scored from about 25 yards out. He was good in that first half in particular. So I think he seems to be the real deal. But he's 18, and 18-year-olds generally will fade as the year, you know, goes on. So he's not going to be the reason why they may or may not finish top four. But I still think when we're talking about this team in May, they're going to be finished in top four.
I tend to agree with you, and I do think they'll get there. But just the amount of issues going on right there, right now, it's just staggering to see. Because in my lifetime, I don't remember this. Manchester United have always, even when they've not won the title, they've been right there. They haven't had, you know, a massive drop-off. They've been, you know, top two, top three anyways, even when they don't win. You know, Mourinho got the better of them for a couple seasons. They came right back. But you can see the makings of something bigger here. You know, that aura, like we talked about, is gone. The fact that their one signing this summer was Fellaini, who they spent way too much on. And, you know, from all accounts, they had a chance to go after Mesut Ozil and didn't want him. And there's problems upstairs, and there's problems on the top. I mean, that, you don't want to say everything's about Ferguson, but...
It's worrisome
because even though he's still involved, the fact that David Gill is gone and was the guy who brought in the signings, and now it's, you know, Woodward and Moyes, it's a totally different hierarchy and structure. It's not just the manager. Everything has changed there, and the fans are on them already. You know, they're not going to stand for this. And I think that if this continues, the results don't come. And this one on Saturday could be, you know,
kind of
a tipping point, because I felt like it was so massive the way it happens, because it's so late like that.
Yeah,
I really think that it could get a little ugly there.
They're not used to conceding.
They're not used to
always go and score late. I think the fans have actually been a bit more patient with Moyes than I expected. I mean, maybe that's just because the Rafa Benitez treatment is so fresh in our minds. But even after that, I thought that they weren't as ruthless, and it doesn't seem to be on a lot of the message boards as you might have expected.
Well, because when Fergie comes out and says publicly, he's my pick. I chose David Moyes. They're going to give him some time here.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And even Fergie said this past week, he goes, it would be an incredible achievement for Moyes to win anything this year.
Can we
so he's already setting the tone a little bit here, saying, let's take a breath here, boys. I mean, it's a big transition. Listen, let's not discount the transition 8 games in from that era to this era.
Sure.
It's huge. And some of the younger players aren't developing, perhaps, as they should be. Tom Cleverley, please. You know,
he
a year and a half ago, he was
going
to be
a free pass.
Yeah, he does. People I think he's been very poor when he's played.
I think so too. I don't think people that chirp him or view him the right way. How he's still getting England calls?
He's not playing many games for England.
But think about what we've seen from this team this season. I mean, the first day of the season at Swansea, they were great and they won 4-1. And we thought, okay, why did we, you know, feel that this team was going nowhere? This team was in free fall. Then they had that dour 0-0 against Chelsea. You say, okay, well, you know, it's a point. They lost at Liverpool. Then home to Palace, they won 2-0, and that was in large part due to a harsh sending off and penalty that gave them a lead in that game close to halftime. Then they got thrashed at City. Then they lost at home to West Brom. Then they won at Sunderland, but it was getting dicey towards the end, even though they're in control, against the worst team in the Premier League who have 1 point. And now this against Southampton. I mean, we haven't seen anything good from them in the league since August 17th. That's 2 months. For 2 months, they've been very, very poor.
I can't believe you're talking about Manchester United, just to listen to that bit. And when I clip this out for the end of the year podcast, when United have won the title by 11 points, it's going to sound fantastic. Do we got time for some love for Southampton quickly? No?
Yeah, of course we do. You kidding me? South Coast team?
Dan Lovren and José Font. Two of the most underrated defenders, I think, in the Premier League right now. And I just love the way that Southampton's clicking. The fact that they don't concede goals. And the fact that they spent all this money, £15 million, euros, whatever it was, on Johnny Depp up there. He hasn't even scored.
Osvaldo?
Pablo, Daniel, whatever
Daniel,
he wants to be called.
Yeah. We'll call him
Pochettino.
And they make things look
I hate to admit it, because I really didn't like when Nigel Atkins was fired, because I thought it was unfair with what he'd done.
It was unfair.
But when you look back, it was the bloody right call, because that team has gone to a new level where we never thought they'd go overnight.
Nicola Cortese is so ambitious, and he saw Atkins taking that team to a certain point, but not any further.
It's harsh.
It wasn't Atkins' fault, but they got ambitions for that club. They spent some money, don't forget, this past summer.
If they could get promoted again, I think they would.
But that being said, listen, I dare say they will concede some more goals before the year's out.
Sure.
And
I still think top 10 is a very good finish for them. I mean,
I put money on that.
That's what they're going to aim for, and you know that is where you have to start before you start thinking legitimately about playing in Europe.
You know who's been a pretty good story this year so far? Arsenal.
Other than us? Oh, Arsenal.
Our story could come down pretty hard pretty soon, let me tell you. Okay. The way this is going right now.
See your reference.
Yes, the seeming collection will continue. Arsenal beat Norwich 4-1. You know the last time Norwich beat Arsenal at home? Oh, sorry, at Arsenal? Opening year 92, so the first game of the EPL era for Arsenal. It's a little stat that I found interesting. I
know
there's not been many games, but still.
I love that you follow Opta on Twitter, because they're very good.
Well, we have no more Black Book here.
No, we don't.
So we've got to go to Opta now, the secondary source of our stats for few years. But, you know, another great performance. Wenger says one of the great performances, not his words, but he said it's a really good performance. And that opening goal by Jack Wilshere, boy, like freaking tick-a-tacker. Supreme, wasn't it? What a beauty.
It's like they watch Bayern Munich play. That's exactly what it looks like with them. I mean, at the performances that they've gotten from Jack Wilshere, and the fact that he stayed healthy, and the fact that they've been able to find that balance so quickly with the reintroduction of Santi Cazorla and how he was going to work with Mesut Ozil. And it didn't seem at all like they got in each other's way. It seemed like they've been playing for a long time, because the way they interchanged in and out, run the flank, the other guy in the middle, and then back and forth, the exchanges were fantastic. And Aaron Ramsey, If he was English, we'd be talking about him as the best player in the world right now.
Well, I think he's been player of the year so far for the Premier League, hasn't
he? Absolutely.
It's hard to say he hasn't, hasn't he?
I got a stat for you. Ooh. Since January of last season, so almost a calendar year, and almost 38 games in the Premier League, Arsenal have the most wins and the most points of any Premier League team.
Wow.
Yeah. So that right away tells you. I mean, their form was very good at the end of the season. Yeah. But for me, you know, you want to see it when it matters, right? You don't want to see a team in baseball that I know you hate, but down the stretch wins a bunch of games to get back to 500, the Blue Jays year to year.
Or a hockey team winning games to get a lower draft pick.
Exactly.
Maple Leafs.
You want to see the teams do it when it matters. And the fact that Arsenal are doing this in a season when, for the first time in a long time, the Premier League is more wide open than it's ever been. Like I said off the top of the show, and I think you guys would agree, there's at least five teams, possibly a sixth, that you could make a case that you could see them lifting the Premier League trophy come May. And that hasn't been for a long time. We thought it was going to be three this season. It's now five or six, because the way Arsenal have played, the way Spurs have played, and the way Liverpool have played, I would put them just behind those five in terms of credentials and the chances to actually keep it going. But this Arsenal team has me believing. I don't think they're going to win the title, but the way they're going, and they're almost the anti-Manchester United in the sense that Man United had a brutal summer, only signed Fellaini, you know, and they're not clicking at all. Arsenal are clicking from the off, and this is Ozil, just the signal of intent and what that did for that club, the fact that they could get a guy with that pedigree and that name in there, he's lifted everyone in that club.
Now. That team enters every game with swagger.
He has lifted every single player. That team plays together, that team plays for each other, that team plays with belief and energy that we haven't seen from Arsenal since 2004.
Arsene Wenger's been saying for a couple of years, my kids are good.
Yeah.
They're going to be really good. Just
we
have
doubted
patience.
Him.
We are going to bring.
Yeah.
I didn't doubt him.
I no. I,
for the record,
you
I,
did.
I didn't. I
did.
Actually backed him quite a lot the last few years.
You
Thank
did.
You very much.
You defended
one of
him
the
a
few,
lot.
The few times I've been right in this podcast or this podcast,
it's also,
the previous podcast.
It's also eight games into the season.
Oh, so now it's early. Oh, it's too early to judge Arsene Wenger.
We have to take a deep breath here and just.
Jeez.
But don't stay close to your mic.
Is it early, Tom, or is it late? What is it? Is it early still? So it's not
I would
too
say
early
it's
to
eight,
United,
I would say it's 8 games into a 38 game season.
Oh, so you're not going to say that United are in a crisis
it's
just
the
yet
history.
Then, right?
He's looking at the history.
Man, he's not in crisis is what you're saying just yet then.
It's getting just there, that. But right.
Look what happens, eh?
Look what happens.
A couple of weeks talking top four sports and all of a sudden he's testing you.
What is it, Tommy? But yeah, I mean the bottom line is he said stay you know, the course. I'm going to spend money when I can. He spent some money. January is still a huge window for this club.
But how would he have said it? How would he have said stay the course?
Yeah, you got to stay the course. I mean, we have a lot of quality in the side. We have to show the ambition and that quality will come through and we will... that's about it.
That's pretty good.
That's going to be a quiz at the end for the listeners.
There's no talk of crisis.
At Christmas time, we'll be like, who was the first person to do an impersonation on this show?
Was that the first one?
On this current format.
Yes.
Not the previous format.
So why
shall not be mentioned.
Don't live in the past.
Again.
Don't live in the past.
Before J-Mo kills
me. It's all about the future and the present. Mm. The grin on J-Mo's face, it's a scowlish grin.
Yeah.
He's very happy. He's like a proud papa. We'll turn out bad, though, don't worry. At first, we're cute, but before the pod turns three, it will evolve into this little demon child.
I love how you're describing us like a toddler. We'll be throwing up all over you in no time.
My daughter turns three next week.
Wow.
Speaking
three
of demons.
Years. Time wow.
Yeah,
flies
I know.
By,
seriously,
man.
What happens, eh? What happens?
And she still loves you?
Oh, she loves me more than her mum. She told her mum that today
oh,
as well.
No.
I was so proud. Oh, she did, yeah.
Kids talk it. By three? I didn't know.
My child, my child's,
well
she's
done.
Very
she's,
advanced.
She's speaking well done.
Is she three? Yet?
She's been speaking for 21 months,
honestly,
actually.
I'm so out to lunch on when, like, kids develop. I don't know. People like, have, like, babies around them. She's like, are they talking? Like, he's two. Like, yes.
I say
don't
this,
know.
Right?
Like,
she,
when do they walk?
Smart,
and I don't know.
She's a smart kid, right? And I should say this for bits and bobs, perhaps. And I did tweet about this a while back.
She's smart because you are.
I know, I'm so dumb. But she's good at many, many things. But hide and seek, she's absolutely crap at.
Really?
Just awful.
Because she's too smart for that.
The hiding
no,
or the seeking
not.
Or both?
Both.
Yeah.
Like she will hide in the same place 10 times in a row. And that means sitting on a couch covering her eyes.
Staggering that.
Like, I just saw you there.
Staggering
there,
that a man in his late.
10 times, and now you're doing it again? I found you 9 times so far.
Staggering a man in his late 30s is better at hide and seek than his 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think she would be able to fool
but she
you.
Will leave me and she'll tell me where to hide. She'll say, Daddy, you hide there.
Of course she's not good. She's three.
She's useless at it.
She's going to listen to this
I'm
in 10 years and like, be rebelling.
This is what Dad thought about you when he began his stardom on the world's best podcast.
I have some great concerns about her.
We know you've got big plans for her future.
Oh, big plans.
Yes. I know.
Back to the football.
Tennis or golf. Anyway, where are we? Oh, yeah, so Arsenal. Yeah, I've been for that. what did you just say? Oh, tennis and golf.
It's
yeah.
very good.
You kidding me?
It's very good.
Exotic locations, big money.
I didn't even catch
couple
that.
Of sponsorships.
No. I thought you were talking about your show lineup for later tonight, Dobby.
No. Maybe music, though, as well. Anyway, I digress. Newcastle tied Liverpool 2-2. We make of the Mbiwa. What's his name again?
It's Mapuyanga Mbiwa.
That's the one.
It's very easy to say when you
it's
say
red card.
It without taking a breath.
I thought it was harsh.
Did he?
I thought it was harsh.
It was
I thought
dive,
it was a penalty.
It was a penalty. It was red card.
He did
in my
pull
opinion.
On him.
It was all of it.
But it seemed harsh as well.
I know that you know the ruling is last man, but I don't know. I've seen that given as just a penalty, not a red card
sure.
before. The the impact that that red card should have. But in the end, it, you know, it didn't really, because Newcastle were able to rally, which, good for them. I mean, that team started really poorly this season, and they're one of the most Jekyll and Hyde clubs in the Premier League for me, Newcastle. I mean, you don't know what you're getting week to week. They can look atrocious. Even half to half, that game against Everton a few weeks ago, the first half they looked like they belonged in League Two, which I know all about. And then, you know, the second half, they come on and they almost get a point out of it when you thought this team had no chance in hell. It might be 7-0.
You mean inconsistent French players?
Yeah,
really?
Very odd.
It's odd, isn't it?
And they were great at Cardiff last time out, and then, you know.
Great goal from Kabay.
Way to fight back this time and get a point. It was.
You think Kabay is staying there?
No.
Past January?
Not at all.
You think he's gone?
It comes down to Pardew willing to let him go. I think that if he's going to go out and put in performances like he did against Liverpool, which I thought he's been quite inconsistent, and he had missed games in the beginning of the season. Pardew says his head wasn't right. You really questioned his integrity or where his head really was at. But if he's going to be able to perform like that in certain games, you need him, and you can't part with him for 10 mil or whatever it was being thrown around.
What the hell has happened to Papi Cisse, by the way?
Oh, disappeared.
Remember how he burst onto the scene in the Premier League?
Well, he's a bit like that guy Demba Ba at Chelsea as well. Those two guys.
I mean, it's not really Ba's fault, because Ba wasn't getting enough time there.
Not a fair comparison either. I mean, I think he had 13 goals in his first 16 games.
I picked him to be the top scorer in the Premier League the next year. And then now he's non-existent out there.
You got prediction wrong.
You know what it is. You know what it is. It's that Geordie lifestyle, mate. It's that Geordie show.
He's eating too many kebabs. Johan Kebab and him.
Stop talking. Stop talking now.
It's like we're living in the past.
Stop talking. Got to move on, okay?
The room is so dark.
That was a joyous choice.
What'd you make of the Liverpool performance as a Liverpool fan?
It's kind of somewhat typical this year. Started off really well, admittedly against some pretty poor teams, aside from Man U, of course. At the back, there's concerns.
That's
Sacco.
That's so different.
Sacco has all the tools, but he hasn't got the toolbox just yet.
Vice versa.
Him and Sissoko were poor, I thought, for much of that game. I mean, that winning goal by Demet, I don't know what Sissoko was doing. He just completely missed him.
Last year, that Agger and Skrtel combination was so good for them.
It's a bit odd because Skrtel was on the outs, and now he's back in there.
They were one of the tightest teams in the league last season.
Skrtel made a lot of mistakes, though. He's made it, you know.
I think
last season, after Rodgers lost confidence in him, he didn't seem himself. Didn't seem the
same. He's going three at the back now as well, right? It's very new. It's a new formation for these guys as well. I thought Torre looked not nearly as good as he has looked on the weekend as well.
He's been better this season than I expected.
Lucas being out is a big deal as well, right?
Didn't play. You always say that.
I know, and he's really, really good. He breaks up play. He just
like he's
calms
so
things down. He's a 10-foot passer, man. That's what he does. And you need that in a team.
Yeah, you do need that. And maybe that's that missing link that I'm not looking for when I watch it. Because you always rant and rave about him, and I forget he's in the team sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, though, for that kind of player, though.
Sure.
For a holding midfielder, if you don't see him, it's generally a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got to tighten it up at the back. It's, you know, like I said, last year they were so good. They're the opposite this season because they're scoring goals for fun. Mm-hmm. And they have that attacking flair with the way Sturridge and Suarez are both.
Yeah, it's working pretty well, isn't it?
It is working really well. Nice. That's got to be frustrating, though, because if they could lock it down defensively how they were last season, they would be, you know, right there and with a bigger chance to kind of upset the apple cart at the top and top three or four. But I just don't think they'll have the consistency personally.
Gerard, 100 Premier League goals. Now, I was going to actually pose a little quiz to you boys to name. There's been 23 players now have done that. Who are the other 22? But I forgot to find out who they were. So yeah. I think
Alan Shearer, Andy Cole.
We could probably go through it right now.
Thierry Henry. Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah,
100 Premier League goals. We could do it.
He's the 13th player.
We could, but we're running out of time.
23rd.
That'd be a good quiz.
It's going to take way too long.
John Molinaro now has a job
Emil
on
Heskey
Christmas
might
Eve.
Have
Michael
Emil
Owen.
Heskey. Oh my God.
Michael Owen. There's tons. Anyway.
Gerard is the...
Well, there's 23.
22,
he's the 13th person to do it with the same team, which surprised me. I didn't think number would be as,
Lampard's done it,
as
right?
high as it was.
Must have done it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. Just recently, I think.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
Moving on.
Speaking of Frank Lampard, Chelsea beat Cardiff 4-1. What a mess.
Is that a Welsh accent?
Cardiff?
What was that?
It was kind of Welshy, somewhat.
All right.
That's one word, though, right? Yeah, we're
Welsh. I don't know how to do it.
No? Cardiff?
No.
Well, they're a very good team this year.
That sounds like Venky's to me, actually. I don't know. Are you Blackburn, or what's going on there?
Wrong place,
I'm here for one accent, sadly. But what a mess Cardiff is right now. And at the top there, Marky Mackay, I mean, I'm sure he'd love to walk at this point. And I dare say at some point he'll be pushed.
Yep.
And that is just ridiculous. He's done a great job there. And it's an example of this, another another foreign owner, forgive me, who doesn't know about football.
So what was this story? Forgive me, I kind of missed it, that they replaced their head of scouting?
Yeah, who was Marky McCarthy's right-hand man.
Okay.
And replaced him with his son's buddy.
Because no. I saw it on Premier League Matchday on SportsCenter over the weekend, and Danny Dicchio said that the owner is like the guy from The Hangover, which I thought was pretty funny. Vincent Tam was very good. He's got his red shirt on over his suit, and he's just like from The Hangover.
Any full frontals, do you think, going in
hope not.
Cardiff games?
No idea. Vincent Tan's son, he's had 3 years work experience. He put the lines on the pitch, and he brought the Lucozade for the boys.
But it's a joke, right? And I mean, there's big meetings, and they're rumors about them trying to force Malky McKay out.
It's ridiculous.
A very good
change
young
their shirts ridiculous. To red. Like.
Oh, they're still the Bluebirds. Still the Bluebirds.
But the thing is, he's got them to the Premier League, and he's spending money. So you know, there hasn't been a lot of revolt and upheaval from the fans because they're getting the job done. And I'd rather change my team colors and sell my soul if my team's going to be in the Premier League than not.
League Two.
Right? I mean, I would take it, and I'm sure Cardiff fans would say the same.
Sure,
who cares?
Sure.
As long as we're up there, we're playing. They're packing that stadium. It's a Premier League stadium. It's a great ground. They've got great fans. You know,
I think they're going to screw things up.
I think they're good enough to stay up.
There's some pretty poor teams in the league right now.
There's some very
bad
teams
right now.
We're
seeing two on Monday, Fulham and Crystal Palace, for example.
There's no way Hull's keeping this up either.
No, not at all. That's a nice story, yeah. Yeah. Back to this game, though. Sami Eto, with that controversial knockout of the ball from David Marshall, Hazard scores. It counted, but the FIFA rules dictate a goalkeeper in possession while in the act of bouncing it on the ground or tossing it in the air, which I think is a part of the Seaman trilogy, by the way, tossing it in the air. It shouldn't count.
Tossing it. I don't know. It's funny. You made a joke.
Enough,
yeah. I laughed.
We're really pushing the envelope.
It's just so rare.
I'm not sure about this. But personally, I hate that rule. Goalkeepers should be his responsibility to know where the attacker is.
Yeah.
Keep the ball close to his chest. I know the rules are the rules, and it shouldn't have counted. Simple as that. But it's a... it's a bad rule.
Yeah,
sure.
I think,
you know what? I love Samuel Eto'o as a player, and for that to be his first goal,
wasn't his
for
goal
that to be
it's his own goal,
well,
right?
Wasn't his goal? Yeah, for that to be his first real moment in the Premier League, you know, yeah. It's unfortunate.
I think when you look back in his career,
that's what I'm going to remember.
Stained because of that.
That's what I'm going to remember. Well, but how many copycat opportunities are we going to see? How many copycat?
Came
professional,
boys.
Another, because of that.
Yeah, how many copycat efforts. Opportunities are we going to see?
I was a bit worried about Chelsea in that match for a while. Actually, it was this is the kind of game that they had to win. This team is not at all firing on all cylinders yet.
Not
I mean,
close.
They
and
were.
Isn't that a bit frightening? Considering that they're still very much in touch.
They're still very much in touch. I mean, they've inconsistency and there's no fluidity right now in that team. And again,
they look very broken.
The
it's
second
not...
half was good, but Cardiff have their issues and they needed some help and they needed that, kind of weak goal to get back in the match. But I don't know, there's something going on there. It doesn't seem quite right yet. Mourinho is still kind of figuring it out, and I think it's going to take some time with this team. I don't think they're the finished product or even close
yet.
I
picked them to win the title and I do not feel comfortable with
that. Yeah, even, I mean, Man City were impressive against West Ham this weekend, and I still feel if you look at everything that's going on right now, and I know we're kind of blanket statement, but I think that Man City are the most complete team any in the Premier League still right now.
Still
if I had a gun to my head and had to pick a team to win the league right now, I'd probably take Man City.
But had I not watched that win at Upton Park, I wouldn't have been able to.
They've been poor on the road.
They've been very poor,
on the road in the league.
In control of that game the entire way. West Ham can't compete with them quality-wise, but I thought that West Ham played a decent game. As good a game as Big Sam could have wanted against that side. But City looked like the team.
They finally
looked
the
like
part.
At home. Exactly.
They're the deepest squad to me in the Premier League. City. They have the most that they can, pick and choose from. Jovetic hasn't even really played a part yet, but the old guard.
When he forgets he's there.
And from all the new guys, Negredo is going to be a very good Premier League player. He's suited for it.
He's built for the Premier League.
But Navas and Jovetic haven't made an impact yet, but
also have a wily old manager who's been there and done it, and he's
there,
a perfect fit for that team, I think.
I really
and
like
he'll get
his
it sorted
fit
out.
The team. He will. I think that engine, once it starts rolling, they're going to win most, if not all, of their home games. And, once he gets it going on the road, but the Silva and Aguero and Toure and that old engine that's been there for a while are going to, it's a perfect mix, I think, of the old and the new there. And I really like where that team's going.
Just like this podcast.
Yeah, we'll see.
Enough podcast references. Yeah. We know it's a new one. Well done, everyone. It's a new podcast. Okay, now it's time to move on. All right.
Let's
happened
just
in the past is in the past.
We should call this something even bigger than a podcast.
Like Shut the Hell Up, Dunlop. Pod
show.
Oh. Let's call it that, shall we?
Take it easy.
How many jobs are you doing? Just one.
About three and a half.
Three soon.
You actually, no, this you is work, a tricky one.
He's like working the dials. Yeah. Not dials.
Right in the ivory needle.
Don't complain. It's J-Mo and I's day off, okay? You guys are just on your day. So if anyone's got anything to complain.
There's not a game seven for you to watch tonight, is there?
No, but there's a Colts game going on right now.
Listen, we're hoping to expense these new mic
headphone jacks
for about $17, and that is an issue right now. So, you know, the budget for the show perhaps isn't what it. There is no budget for the show. Are we kidding?
But keep listening and tell your friends.
Yes, it's wonderful.
It's all for the love of it. I wouldn't miss it for the world, boys.
Before we get to... it's been great. Again, enough of this.
I know.
Backslapping.
We're so much.
Jesus.
Enough
of that.
Nostalgia.
Once we were great, to now we're even greater. No, well, kind of. Well, we'll see, won't we?
We have to earn the respect and the love of our new audience.
Respect.
I know. We have to earn the... For some reason, you listen of our audience.
And if you don't like it, then please tweet John Molinaro and tell him what you really think.
Yeah. Before we get to Spain with Sid Lowe, Swansea beat Sunderland 4-0. Gus Poyet in his debut. Usually you see a response, don't you, from a team when they get a new manager. Now, pre-match, he says, don't compare me to anyone else, especially De Canio. And, well, 4-0 is the final there. Boy, I mean, I actually had this team... surviving this season. I tell you, they've been an absolute disaster all year long, and he's got a big job in his hands to survive this year at this point, isn't he?
Oh, I mean, 1 point, they're sitting there rock bottom. We talked about all these bad teams, and it's early to look at the table, but when you look at, you know, how big a gap is already being created, it gets scary.
Just look at the history, yeah. Few teams have been able to start as poorly as them and get out of it. I think the stat is 5 teams have started as bad, 3 went down.
Yeah, they have 1 point, Palace has 3, and then everyone else has 7 or more. And I mean, there are poor teams, but you start to think the longer you go without a win, you're going to have to get to that 40 points. It took a lot last season. It's going to take close to 40. And
they're in the QPR zone where you would expect them each week, well, this has got to be better. This has got to be the response week. This is where they get it sorted on the back line. This is where they get the luck. They haven't had much luck.
They've, to be fair to them, they've had a really tough schedule to start the season. I mean, it's not been kind at all. They haven't had any real cupcake home games that I can remember that they didn't win and whatnot. So, you know, there's time. I think this was the move that they had to, you know, get rid of De Canio and get the new manager in. And Swansea can be that good on their day. So I think that it was, you know, tricky once Swansea got rolling. And good God, Jonathan de Guzman.
Oh, what a goal. What a season he's having so far.
Wouldn't it be nice, eh?
Wouldn't it be?
Wow.
Yeah, he's going to look great at the World Cup next
year. He's just gotten better and better and more confident. He's a player. Yeah. He's a player.
So we're half an hour into the show, and you're settled in on being early this year, right? It's early in the season. is that where we're at right now?
It's certainly going to be a season.
It's flopping.
Certainly going to be a game.
It's going to be a season.
It depends on the point I'm trying to make. You know how it is. You have to tailor what you think to making your point.
And that, listeners, is how it's done.
Well, as mentioned, we're setting the bar way, way too high for a debut podcast. As mentioned, Paolo Bandini will join us later in the show. But right now, heading to Madrid, Spain, where Sid Lowe joins us. And Sid knows a fair bit about Spanish football, you might say. Welcome to the debut Soccer Central podcast, Sid.
My pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with Real Madrid. They're now within 2 points of first place. 2-0 winners against Malaga on the weekend. Gareth Bale with a cameo late in the game, won a penalty. So was Marca's information erroneous? Is he actually not so badly hurt after all?
Well, what Gareth Bale said after the game was that the injury had been exaggerated, that it wasn't as bad as was made out. And I think if you look at the way that the story broke in Marca initially about Gareth Bale's back and then the way that Real Madrid responded to it, I think what you see is two things fundamentally. That, yes, there was an issue in the back, but that Marca's interpretation of its potential damage was probably an exaggeration. But certainly that the question mark was there. And then, of course, secondly, the fact that in order to basically say this isn't so bad, this isn't a problem, what Real Madrid did was admit that there was a small protrusion of the kind of intervertebral disc in his back, at the very bottom of his back, which is not something they'd admitted at all before. Now, clubs are always quite cautious about what they say about players' medical conditions, but in theory, at least, the bigger clubs are open about it in the sense that they say, you know, so-and-so player, in this case Gareth Bale, is not available for X amount of time because of the following injury. Now, with Bale, Madrid had not actually said that, and it's something they've been looking into for a while, the medical staff, the extent to which it was possible that some of his muscular problems were connected to a tension in his back. And so, in a way, and I know this sounds absurd on one level at least, in a way, Mark are getting it wrong, at least in terms of getting it wrong so far as the seriousness of the injury is concerned, because they were talking about a spinal disc hernia, which means an actual rupturing of that disc, plus a couple of other discs that were protruding. Real Madrid say, no hernia, no rupturing, just one disc protruding. But actually, in a way, Marca did us all a service in so much as by pushing the story much further than they should have done, and by talking about an injury, what they did at least do was force Real Madrid to come out and say, yes, there is an issue with the back, but not to worry, it's not so serious. And I think what will, of course, happen now is that time will show whether or not this is a genuine problem for Gareth Bale.
Right, obviously it's going to be a big deal then, no matter what, because of what he cost. Now, Ancelotti said this week also that Ronaldo won't change position, but Bale can change position. Where do you see it all ending up? Where will Gareth Bale play? Left, right, middle, left back, goal, where?
Well, it's a curious one, this, because Ancelotti says that Cristiano Ronaldo won't change position, but Cristiano Ronaldo is changing position. In that we saw with Mourinho last year, Real Madrid played very, very clear 4-2-3-1, except for those rare occasions when he shifted Modric into the midfield and changed a slight shape and made it something closer to a 4-3-3. This year, theoretically at least, Ronaldo has been given the same move the way that he wants, which fundamentally means coming in off the left-hand side and using the left-hand side as a starting point for diagonal runs to end up as centre-forward, which is as he was last year. But Ancelotti keeps telling us that what he's playing is a 4-4-2, and it's a 4-4-2 that doesn't often look like a 4-4-2, to be honest. So that idea that Ronaldo won't change his position is fine, but I'm not entirely clear which position it is that Ancelotti thinks he's not changing. Now, I think what we'll see is something that is close to a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1, depending on semantics, really, to some extent, how you want to see it. And I think we will fundamentally see Cristiano Ronaldo play left, coming in towards the centre, and Gareth Bale playing on the right, slightly coming in towards the centre, with the two fullbacks behind those two men being the guys that really provide the attacking width. But of course, there will be a lot of rotation for it. I think one of the reasons that Ancelotti says that is because, even if not over the course of the season, I think in the short term, at least, he does want the chance or the opportunity to move Bale around until he's comfortable that he's found Bale's best position. And also, to be honest with you, I think that he wants the chance to move Bale around because he wants the chance to be able to rest different players each time. So he doesn't want it, I think, to be a straight choice, Bale or Angel Di Maria. He wants it to be able to be some weeks Bale or Isco, or even maybe Bale or one of the other midfielders who moves out, or maybe even Bale or Benzema, with Ronaldo being the centre-forward and Bale being either on right or left. So I think what we'll see is that by the end of the season, we'll probably see Bale on the right, Ronaldo on the left, Isco behind the forward, and presumably, of course, Karim Benzema, although that forward position is another doubt at the moment. So that's what we'll end up with. But I think Ancelotti, what he's really doing is enabling himself in the short term to move Gareth Bale around a bit.
If only Paulo Bento had the same luxury of a problem to deal with Portugal. Let's talk Barcelona. You summed up Real Madrid brilliantly there. Barca dropped points for the first time at the weekend and dropped points at Osasuna. What did you make of that, and what have you made of Tata Martino's tactics so far?
Well, in a way, I mean, look, I'd be a liar if I didn't say that there was an element of surprise to this result. Bear in mind that Barcelona have won every game until now, that they've gone 64 league games in a row scoring a goal. So failing to score and drawing 0-0 at Osasuna is a surprise on one level. But on another level, it's not a huge surprise. I think if you looked at the fixtures before the season started, there are, I think, between the start of the season and this weekend, there were probably three or four games where you would look at it and think, right, Barcelona could drop points there. And perhaps the surprise is that they didn't drop points elsewhere in some of those harder games, for example, Valencia or Sevilla maybe, and they were very, very late winners against Sevilla. But Osasuna, in Pamplona would certainly have been one of those games where you could imagine failing to score off the back of an international week even more so. And I say that as someone who's quite tired, to be honest, of the international week excuse for big clubs, because it seems to me to be such a rich man's problem that to complain about it when you're playing against clubs with budgets a fifth or sixth, even a tenth the size of yours, just seems to me to be quite pathetic in a way. But, of course, it is a reality that teams don't play quite as well off the back of international week. So in that sense, it's not a huge surprise. In terms of an overall judgment of Tata Martino so far, well, the bottom line is, of course, that Barcelona were one game away from their best ever start. They didn't get that. So it's been a really, really good start in terms of results. But I think there have been times when the play hasn't quite convinced, where they've had less control than in the past, when they've been a bit more anarchic, but a little bit less dominant in terms of possession. Of course, against Rayo Vallecano, they lost possession for the first time in five years any team, 315 games, had had more than 50% of the possession against Barcelona. But Barca won that 4-0, and in a way that's Barcelona's start in a nutshell, that game. Less control, but creating chances and making things happen. And I think there are some very positive signs, in particular the adaptation of Neymar, which has taken no time at all. He's playing really, really well already. He seems to be very good off the front as the Messi role, but also very good with Messi in the side as well. And bit by bit, I think they'll combine more. The concerning thing, I think, from Barcelona's point of view, will be essentially the fact that their problems are basically the same as they were last year, that they still look very vulnerable at back. It still feels like Barcelona can have 15 shots, but if they concede one corner, they're going to be vulnerable. They're going to be nervous. But it seems to be ridiculously easy to score against them with just a breakaway or a free kick or a corner or a set piece of some sort. And so that will concern them. And in particular, that will concern them in the build-up to the Clásico next weekend, because, of course, the very nature of the way that Real Madrid are set up means that they are the perfect team to take on a side like Barcelona in terms of their ability to withstand a reasonable amount of pressure, to withstand the other side having possession and not really mind, and then play them on the break. And with the talent that Madrid have got on the break, I think they'll score goals at the Camp Nou next week.
Well, let's hope so. I'm looking forward to that for sure. Great breakdown there, Sid. Before we let you go, though, you obviously know a lot about these two clubs, and you have a book out, Fear and Loathing in La Liga, Barcelona versus Real Madrid. Tell us about that book.
Well, essentially, it's more than anything else. I think the idea was to write a history of the two clubs and their rivalry, and fundamentally, because you can't do the entire history of both the two clubs, it ended up being focused in terms of trying to explain how it was they got to the point they're at now, what it was that made this rivalry as powerful as it is, and what the key moments were in terms of creating the identity that these two clubs have. And that's an identity that, of course, rests on reality, on their own perceived reality, and also on their perception of each other, and the way that the rivalry between the two clubs is symbiotic, the players that have played a part, and fundamentally, I think what I've ended up writing is kind of almost an oral history of the two clubs, and focusing very much on the human stories behind it, but really trying to get at that sense of what these clubs really are, and to what extent what they are depends on each other. And I think the answer to that is to a really huge degree.
Yeah, they transcend the sport, don't they, in many regards. Sid, really looking forward to reading that. We can pre-order it in Canada at Amazon.ca. So people, get out there, get your credit cards out and buy it. It's going to be a great read. Sid, great job, mate. Really enjoyed this and hope to speak to you down the road.
Fantastic. My pleasure. Take care.
Sid Lowe, quite the scoop actually getting Sid on here. Scoop? Coup, whatever.
Coup.
You get the idea.
Yeah, more of a coup.
Yeah, more of a coup.
More of a coup than a scoop. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a difference, isn't
it? I don't think it's much of a scoop.
It'd be a scoop if no one knew he existed.
Sure.
But people do, because he's really well known.
I really want to read his new book.
It'd be amazing. And yeah. I mean, just the stories from those two teams this year so far.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing Bale come on off the bench this evening, and this being Sunday, of course, and winning that penalty, and not seeing his spine laid out on the field and actually playing a role. Good to see.
Didn't seem quite balanced, though, did he? Kind of tipped.
Game was on Saturday, though, the Real Madrid game.
Sorry, right? Saturday. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did the highlights tonight, as in Sunday. Yeah. We're taping this after Soccer Central, just so the listeners can.
Sid's actually a very good follow on Twitter as well. He's funny.
Yes, yeah.
He does a lot of what you do. Or if he gets comments, he retweets them and engages people, which
it's fun.
I know you love to do.
The title about Twitter is there's a lot of idiots out there.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Do you think it's Barca's to lose this year? You know, I mean, it seems silly, but Real off-season probably had the better off-season.
I think they did have a better off-season. I think
although
they also have better
could be argued with Ozil leaving, of course.
I think very few would argue that. certainly Flo Isco, Perez is not
Isco, Mendy, and Bale for Ozil.
Isco has been great. Isco has been great. And I think you've seen Ancelotti trying to figure out what's the best use for him, because he's come off the bench and he's played in a role behind Benzema. He's played in Benzema's role. And I think that's what's going to be the toughest part for Real, is figuring out what the best fit is and adapting that every week, because it's going to have to change. It will change in your opponents. It will change based on form. And when you have so many options, as we've seen with City over the last few years, just to use one example, that's the trickiest part, is finding that right jigsaw puzzle for that day. And I think that Tata Martino, obviously, everything's brand new to him, and he's figuring that out as well. But there's still a core of those guys that know each other, whether he's throwing Martin Montoya in and Mark Bartra. Those guys know who they're playing.
Are you happy that Tata Martino's cutting the soul of Barcelona?
I think that Barcelona are the more well-rounded team in the league.
When
you look,
side.
When you look, I mean, it's now 3 points because Barcelona just drew Osasuna today, 0-0 away. But you look,
Saturday.
No, it was today, Barca, wasn't it?
Saturday.
Was it?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Both Saturday.
Ah, right.
So what's tomorrow?
What's going on in the CFL,
Dobby?
Yeah, sure. Anyways, Barcelona, you look at them, and they've been way more consistent. Real Madrid, we know that very controversial penalty against Elche got them that result. They also scored two goals late, last week or 2 weeks ago before the international break to get a result. And just the consistency under Ancelotti has not been there. On their day, of course, they can be step for step with Barcelona. Those teams go back and forth, and we've seen such amazing El Clasicos over the last five seasons between them, and that could be the difference again this year, who can win those games. But I just think that Barcelona, week to week in La Liga, are going to pick up the results more often than Real Madrid will, who will drop points. So I definitely think it's Barcelona's to lose.
All right, now I'm very, 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 very excited to welcome our next guest, a very good friend of our previous incarnation, of course. It's Paolo Bandini, these days playing his trade in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Paolo, how you doing, mate?
Very good, very good, James. How are you?
Good, good. How's the that NFL thing you're doing a bit of these days?
it's always a little bit manic for me on Sundays at the moment, because I am doing some NFL writing as well as the Serie A, but it's enjoyable. My fantasy team is having a bit of a shocker this afternoon, but other than that, it's going well.
I was going to say, you choose two sports and two leagues which compete pretty much in the same day, and you've got a very patient wife, I think. Let's start with some Serie A, and let's stay with Serie A because we're not an NFL podcast. Roma beat Napoli 2-0 on Friday. They're perfect in the season, Paolo. Now, I don't know when last time we spoke. It was a while back, though. And if I told you that 8 games into this season, Roma under Rudy Garcia would be 8-0 with one goal against, what would you say to me?
Yeah, I wouldn't have believed you. It's wild. I mean, the idea that this team, as you say, not only top of the league, but the fact they've scored 22 goals, they've only conceded one. And you look at the teams they've played. This isn't a group who've just had a bunch of nobodies they've gone through in the first part of the season. They've won the derby against Lazio. They've gone away to Inter and won 3-0. And this weekend beating Napoli 2-0, a Napoli team who really came into the season with much higher expectations, much more of a sense that this was supposed to be a team challenging Juventus. It's absolutely unreal. And I was really fortunate to have the opportunity to speak to Rudy Garcia right before the season started. And he came across as very together. He was obviously very different to Zeman in lots of ways, and some of them very important ways. I think one of the things that he really has about him that Zeman didn't have is that he is one of those guys who will defend his players in public to the hilt, even if he's going to go and tear them apart behind closed doors every now and then. And I think that was something that the club lost a little bit last season. I think Zeman really threw De Rossi and threw Osvaldo in particular, but a couple of other players as well, to the wolves a little bit at times. And he was quite willing to let the press get into people. I thought that was something that Roma needed in Garcia. I thought he seemed like a guy who had a strength of character, who was going to be able to handle those situations reasonably well. But honestly, I also thought he was a little bit naive. He was talking about these ideas of, I'm willing to drop Totti if I need to, because you have to drop any player if you need to. It's just a question of being straight with the players. And he talked about, yes, I know it's Rome is it's the league under the power of 10 in terms of the atmosphere and how much intensity they're going to have. But he just seemed so he was saying these things, but he seemed so calm and so unfazed by it that I thought he's got to be being naive. He can't be understanding what he's walking into. And it turns out that he understood it better than all of us, because he's really got a handle on this situation so quickly. It's just genuinely hard to believe.
As you said, he'll defend his players to the high heavens. So Luis Suarez to Roma, then, is what we can expect in the next transfer window. Paolo, I'm going to throw a number at you, and you're going to guess what this number is. 243.
243, that's the number of goals that Francesco Totti has scored in Serie A.
Is that, that is the number of goals that have been scored in Serie A this season. And it's remarkable for us, having spoken with you in our previous days, when it seemed like the goals, a figure like that was something we were talking about at the end of the season. Can you explain why there have been so many goals in Italy?
There's lots of reasons. I mean, I suppose that some of the most obvious things you'd point to is that teams that you would typically associate or would have been able to associate with not conceding goals in recent years are conceding a lot of goals. I mean, Juventus this weekend is the obvious case in point, having conceded four against Fiorentina. Fiorentina are a great reason why they're getting a lot of goals in Serie A themselves at the moment, because they have this mentality under Vincenzo Montella that their first intention is to entertain people rather than to necessarily even win games, in the way he puts it sometimes. But likewise, Napoli, they're no longer the counter-attacking team that they were under Walter Mazzarri. They're a little bit more open, a little bit more attacking under Rafael Benitez. I think when you've got the big teams in the league, you're all taking a mentality like that, it can influence the whole setup. But I think there's probably an element of that, and an element as well to which maybe some of those teams that have just come up, like Verona, again, they're not playing for draws, they're playing for wins the whole time, and that stacks up quickly through the league.
Paolo, you talked about Juventus there and how they've been a bit more fallible this season than they were last. Roma, to me, remind me a little bit of Arsenal, to put it in context, where it's been a great start, and Gervinho being there helps as well. It's been a great start, but I still don't believe in them as possible title winners. Do you think Roma are the biggest threat to Juventus to win the Serie A this season?
After this afternoon, I'm tempted to say that the biggest threat to Juventus is Juventus themselves. I mean, you know, there was a real uncharacteristic collapse, and I think that it's really woken a few of us up to the fact that really we should have seen before from the way they were playing. But this Juventus team is not the Juventus team that we saw last season. It is not the team we saw the year before that. And you would have thought they'd be stronger. They brought in Tevez, they brought in Llorente. This was supposed to be another step towards being able to compete on all fronts. But something is missing, and it's something a little bit intangible. They don't seem to have that same focus that they had the last two seasons. And I think that happens sometimes to successful teams. So I think Juventus are more vulnerable than they used to be. And I think that right now, yes, I would definitely put Roma in the category of teams that can catch them as a consequence. I think if we were seeing Juventus like last season, I would say no, I don't think they're able to play to that level. But let's look at the fact that Roma aren't going to be playing in Europe this season. So, for instance, after that win on Friday, Rudy Garcia said to his players, have 3 days off. Don't even come back in on Monday. We're going to take a nice break and get that, you know, get ourselves fresh again for the next thing. No one else can afford to do that, because Juventus are playing in the Champions League. Milan are playing in the Champions League. Even teams like Fiorentina have got to go and play in the Europa League on in midweek. Napoli, sorry, obviously as well, playing in the Champions League. This is a big impact over the course of the season. And when you've got a team playing as structurally in such a structurally organized way as Roma at the moment, with a midfield as good as Kevin Strootman, Daniele De Rossi, Miralem Pjanic, and then hey, if we have any problems with them, we can call Michael Bradley in off the bench as well. I think you've got such a good core to that team that it's not something that I look at and think, well, that has a good reason to fall apart. Now, having said that, obviously Totti got hurt this weekend. He was hurt before the goals, so they coped without him. But he is a very important piece of that puzzle, and how will they do if he's out for a long time? But I do think that when you look at this team, as with the midfield, you can look at other parts of the pitch and say that, funnily, despite having sold players, despite having brought in a bunch of money this summer, they have got good replacements that they can bring in. You know, you lose someone up front. Hey, Adam Ljajic has been sitting on the bench most of the season so far. Let him step in and do something. It's not a team that's as thin a squad as you might imagine it to be, and they aren't going to be as stretched as some other squads will be in any case by that European competition.
Yeah, it's been a great story, and I think Strootman is one of the signings of the summer. I think across Europe he's been outstanding so far. Paolo, we could talk for hours and hours, and it's been too long, but thanks so much, mate.
Cheers for having me on, guys. Anytime.
All right, happy now to welcome Mr. Molinaro to the podcast. Hey, J-Mo.
Hi, boss.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You are a boss, kind of, aren't you, for this, aren't you?
For this, I am.
Oh, you're pretty emphatic about that, weren't you?
Well, yeah.
Well, for this, I am. You want to do what you damn well say.
For me.
You asked me a question, I gave you an honest answer. Sorry if that offends you.
As a journalist, he's not used to being on the other end.
Exactly. I'm very uncomfortable by all this.
Well, listen, J-Mo, you heard Palo there talking about, do you believe that Roma could be the heirs apparent to the Serie A championship?
Well, I think potentially, yeah. I mean, I really like a lot of what Rudy Garcia has done. And, you know, I think signing Strootman in the offseason, I think that's going to prove to be a steal for AS Roma. You know, Totti is, I think, not quite back to what he once was, but he's certainly playing at a level where the discussion in Italy is, you know, if he's on form and if he's healthy, does Cesare Prandelli bring him to Brazil next year?
Does he? Do you think he does?
Well,
I mean, Prandelli's got his he very much has his guys in his system, and he's building and building. Would he risk that?
If he brings Totti, he's not as it's not as a starter. I think it's as a bench player. But as I said, if he's healthy and if he's on form, if he's anywhere close to what he once was, then I think it's a consideration that he has to make.
And he has been this season. It's hard to ignore him, regardless of the fact that Prandelli's had his guys and Totti wasn't a part of getting to Brazil.
Yeah.
If he's playing like this come April, he's there.
You got to consider it. So he's been great. Who I've been really impressed with Roma this season is Pjanic. I think he's just been lights out. I mean, he's
finally
got
to see him.
Yeah, he's coming off those two great goals against Napoli. I think he's been fantastic. And defensively, too. I mean, what is it, one goal against in eight games? I mean, that's very un-Roma-like when you look at their past season. So it seems to me that they have the defense sorted out. Strootman gives them a bit of steel and quality in midfield. So, yeah, I think you can't discount what they've done.
It was amazing early in the summer when they sold Osvaldo, and then there's talk about Lamela going as well, and this new coach, and thinking, wow, Roma, what happened to the great Roma? Now under the American ownership, they don't quite get it. You know, it was once a great team, it's going to go have another poor season. And here we are now, you know, in October, and it's been, you know, one of the, if not the story of European football. I think it's a wonderful story.
It is, yeah.
2001 is a long time ago. Those fans, they need more success.
Yeah, and again, credit to Rudy Garcia, because I think he's brought a sense of organization to them on the pitch, which has been sorely lacking over the last couple of years.
Zeman, whoa.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
he's
a complete opposite tactically and sort of organizationally and philosophically. So I think he's been the key to the turnaround in Rome.
Bit of a revolving door. Hard to believe that Ranieri actually was there over the course of more than one season, but it's good to see that they've got stability, because they're very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, it's a proud club too. I mean, it's the capital club, right? You want to see them do well, and I think it makes Serie A far more interesting when they're doing well.
And Serie A is very interesting this season.
Yeah,
in fact, it's been good the last few years. Actually, I think it's really bounced back.
Yeah, you know, no doubt.
You can tell by Dobby's trying to jump in the microphone how much he's enjoying the Serie A this season. But
so pumped about it. Serie A is the best league in the world.
Robo Dobby! You're back.
Oh boy.
Robo Dobby. Well, now it's MLS talk, so you can definitely...
All right, I'll be jumping back again. You guys go ahead.
Bye, Dobby.
J-Mo, Tim Cahill scored a goal on Sunday, 7 seconds into the match. Unreal, as the Red Bulls took on DC. Houston. It was Houston. 7 seconds in. It's insane. But to the weekend, some really big games from the playoff. Dobby, what's wrong?
No, you're just talking about the MLS and, you know, how it's very interesting, actually. Who did New York play? Houston, Kansas? I don't even know. So clearly you didn't care either. So.
I do care about the MLS, right.
Someone does not have Sportsnet mobile alerts
when
on their phone.
Start?
I watch
weeks?
The MLS all the time.
I do enjoy
the MLS.
I have to say, J-Mo, explain what's going on, because
please,
Canadian teams hate the playoffs. This is the vibe I'm getting here.
Well, Toronto certainly does. I think they've got some
Vancouver kind of fell off the cliff.
Yeah, I mean, they had a really poor sort of summer and poor September. And in fact, I think in the 3 years they've been in the league, they've yet to win a game in September. So
is Montreal or Impacte, as they would say on Rye, if they were talking about their Italian team? That was my attempt at a joke. Do they look like a playoff hungry team?
I think so. Although they've certainly struggled. I mean, they just ended that terrible winning streak, but you know that was a big win on the weekend against. Who was it that they were playing?
See? This is my mind.
Philadelphia. MLS now.
Sorry, Philadelphia. You know, DeVio scored that goal, and then it was nice to see Carl Ouimet, a Canadian kid, score like the late winner. And that's a huge result for Montreal because now they sit third in the conference, and chances are they'll avoid that first round of the playoffs and go directly into the conference semifinals. So it's a big result for them.
It's such a crapshoot once you get in, as we've seen in years past. The parity really comes through in the playoffs. So
that's the one thing I really like about MLS is that once the playoffs start, it's such great parity and the games are so entertaining because everyone goes for it and anyone can beat anyone at any time that I think it really kind of showcases the league. So yeah, I'm excited about this. If Montreal can clinch next week in Toronto, I mean, that would be something.
It's great because the defending is just so atrocious.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. That's why we have such open games and anything can happen. What about Kikuta Mané's strike this week?
Oh, fabulous.
Too bad Vancouver, obviously, they're out of the playoffs. Yeah. So they're not going to make it this year. But 18 years old, you know, we were just glorifying Adnan Yanazai earlier. Well, you know, in Canada, we have Kakuta Mané, 3 goals last week, 6 in the season. And they're not just your, you know, regular strikes. They're beautiful goals. Incredible technique.
So how long before the conversation is how long before we naturalize him and make him Canadian and play for the National?
Oh, not long. It could be within the next 3 minutes.
I think you touched on it about his like touch and his skill, and those have been great on the goals, but I think he's shown great maturity as well. And his runs off the ball just to get in position, mm-hmm. it kind of goes beyond his 18 years of age. You think this is not a young teenage player. So I think he's been great. And again, it's a player that Toronto FC could have had if they drafted him in the draft.
Omar Gonzalez.
The list is endless.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your pick for the obviously, we said it's wide open this year. We know that. We know who the glory teams are, who's playing really well. I mean, Casey would be a nice story, of course.
Yeah.
Who would you pick at this point to win this thing?
I do like Kansas City because I just think they've been consistent all season. And I know they've faltered lately. They've dropped down to whatever, I think, third or fourth on the table. But don't discount LA. I mean,
discount them, though. Why not?
Two-time defending champions. They have Robbie Keane. They have Landon Donovan.
And MLS might actually give them one more DP before the season's out.
Yeah.
So
well, there's
possible.
Always...
Let's talk about that, you know, just finding a way. Because, oh, my God, they might not win.
Right. Because God forbid LA falls short and the league doesn't help them out some way. I digress. no, but I don't discount LA. I think they're a team to watch. And, you know, I mean, it'd be great if Montreal could go on a sustained run, but, you know, they got to get in first.
I think Robbie Keane deserves another title, too. You know, good guy that he is.
Such a young man.
Yeah.
I really want to see Seattle great interview. For what it counts. I think Seattle, you love to see that fan base is so passionate about it. And it's such a fun atmosphere there. And they actually, you know.
Well, MLS is taking care of them as well right now.
Sure.
Yes, very much
absolutely. Clint Dempsey, but still.
I'd like to see Seattle.
It is. I mean, that's real football. Yeah. It's a real football crowd.
Yeah.
It really is.
Where's the final this year? I don't know.
No, it's the one until it goes to the home team now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's why last year it was in LA.
No, it did last year, too.
All right. Yeah. Perfect. So in Seattle would be ideal.
Yeah. Who's leading the Western Conference in the CFL, Dobbs?
That's right. That would be the Stampeders.
Jesus.
And it's not conference, it's a division. There are no conferences in the CFL.
Can't wait until the winter season takes over, MLS. Wicked. I would love it. Be amazing.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Brazil, Chile under the dome. You feel robbed? No, real question.
Honestly, I'm not even that excited about it to begin with.
You have Tuesday nights off, then let's
switch. I know,
switch.
I'll be there. I'll watch then it. Let's switch. Just friendly matches. It's nice. I mean, it's a great, nice event, I suppose, but
Neymar, Diego Costa in your backyard?
No, too great. I mean, Chile's a
it's
bloody
a
fun
to
team
see
to watch.
The
but
potential World Cup winners in the year of the World
Cup. Yeah,
Cup,
it's cool, but I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh my God.
I didn't know that Dobby thought Chile were going to win the World Cup. That's crazy.
Well, Chile's a damn good team, and it'll be all right. I'll be there. You won't. You're working.
No, we've already established that.
We done? Want to swap?
Yeah, sure.
No.
Trade that Tuesday night.
Not going to happen.
All right.
No. We're discussing Champions League here, but we're out of time. This is going really heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, we're over an hour and a half. We've lost.
No, not are we? No. Where are we at?
Yeah, pretty close.
Screw preview material.
Yeah, preview to hell with. You know, what's the point of previewing
what's
and predicting,
point?
Right?
So we're going to watch the games anyway.
Exactly.
We're just going to watch them.
And you can watch the games on Sportsnet.
Yes. No, because we've got bits and bobs first.
Oh, did I give it? Well, okay, fine. Run the ship again.
Play your dials over there.
Yeah, it's called Riding the Ivory Needles.
Bits and Bobs is back. Our chance to air any grievances, anything you want about anything in the world. About anything. Even in football if you want. Dobby, go ahead. Do you have anything? I haven't got anything.
Pretty boring. I went and saw Gravity this afternoon. It was really good. I would suggest go and see it. The
ship sinks?
It was there about 20 minutes early. My girlfriend and I sat through the previews and everything. And then
put on your 3D glasses. Don't have the 3D glasses.
Oh, no.
Have to run down. Of course, I'm like, I'll go get them. Have to run down, get
them. Nice young man.
Yeah, have to go get them. Miss the beginning, very beginning. Have to go through it. It's so intense right off the top. I'm like, I'm such a bad
twat.
Person.
I think we're twat's allowed. We can use the word twat, can't we?
Oh, boy.
Twat? We can. Yeah, sure we can.
We are going to need...
It's
common English in England.
We are going to need a thesaurus.
It's a good movie. Go see it. It was really intense.
What's funny, producer Dominic Gentili watched it, and he said afterwards, yeah, it's one of my biggest fears. You know, it's terrifying most of them. Dom, you know, don't worry. You're not
going to
end up in space.
Going to space. Don't worry.
It's not like I'm terrified of heights or, you know, the ocean or fires. No, you're not going to end up in space, Dom. Don't worry about it. Chill.
You never know. Yeah, reach for the stars. That's what they told us in grade school.
Literally.
Yeah.
Did they reach for the stars and gravity? Was that the problem?
No idea.
Just go see it.
No idea at all. My bits and bombs, baseball's over. Watching the Detroit Tigers lose, courtesy of their horrific bullpen that did not complement at all their phenomenal starting pitching, will leave me aching and crying and forgetting about baseball for months.
The Tigers. Oh, this window is going to close.
I think it closed with that loss Saturday night.
Oh, boy. But yeah. I must say, when we planned the ALCS in April and it was Jays Tigers, one of them got there. Yeah. So at least
I didn't get that road trip either way. I didn't get it either way.
You're also a St. Louis fan, aren't you?
There are certain things about the previous edition that we might have had before that no, it isn't. Tigers for
loves
life.
The cards.
Loves his cards.
Are you going to bash your child again here or what?
Basher?
Terrible in trouble here. Sucks.
That would have been a good business.
Stupid
right?
3-year-old.
Well, JMO, you on?
Yeah, I'm just tired.
Don't be a downer.
Don't use the word twat.
No.
I'm sure that's fine.
I'm just, this is going to be a bit of a rant, but people on the TTC who complain about, like, parents who bring on baby carriages onto the streetcar.
Charmin does that all the time.
Oh, it's just, that bugs me. I mean, like, what do they expect parents to do? Like, to leave their child, like, unattended? Or, like,
Have a baby, have a car.
Yeah.
Miserable people in the world. Like, they really are.
I understand it's, you know, it's rush hour. The streetcar is crowded, and having like a baby carriage on course isn't, you know, whatever. It's an inconvenience, but you know, deal with it. Get on with your life. Don't make the parent feel any worse.
That's how we've connected to a new audience. No matter what city you live in, on public transit, you know what it's like to deal with that.
Yeah, in that case, I'll just kind of go from there a little bit. You know, as a father, you do change somewhat, right? And I was never into kids before. I never liked kids. You know, they bug me. You know, they're noisy little whiny little things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I have my daughter, right? And obviously, I love her. Like more than anything, but I still really dislike other kids. Like really dislike them. I haven't got
even
time
more
for them.
So now.
You know, I've got lots of friends with kids. Like, oh, really? Do you have to bring the kid over? Really?
How are the kids' parties, Charms?
Oh,
do you have to drink.
It's my girl's birthday party next weekend. Actually,
oh yeah,
that's gonna be awful.
All the toddlers.
It's gonna be just screaming.
You gotta
and,
see the baby.
Oh, the
look
baby.
What my
look
little
at
one's
the baby.
Doing. Look at my little one. He's so cute. He's hideous, actually.
Yeah, he's like look at the size of that head.
Giant forehead.
It's out of proportion right now. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And that's going to be an awful party. 7.5.
In the previous, though, three parties, I guess, for her birthday, I've ended up getting very drunk, which helps. So alcohol helps, I suppose.
Responsible father.
This is a good bits and bobs. I just learned recently how expensive daycare is, and I honestly don't know how people do it.
No.
I was talking to one of our coworkers on Soccer Central, actually, and he was just, I was asking, oh, is your wife going back to work? So he said, yeah, next month, you know, she's going back. Found a really good daycare, super cheap, only $1,200 a month.
Oh, yeah.
I said, you said month instead of year. Like,
if you have two kids, if you have kids in daycare,
it's
if you have two kids in daycare, it's often cheaper to get a nanny.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It's cheaper in many
cases. I was
pretty
much made up my mind I'm never having children.
No, I don't
think. Yeah, well, we don't bother. We got a dog.
Yeah.
And he's a great babysitter. So we just you know, lock the doors, TV on, dog with her. She's fine.
Just tell her to play hide and seek.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine, for like 8 hours.
Oh, count to 3,000. She can. She's very smart. I'll come and get you up to 3,000, right?
Child services banging down your door tomorrow morning. Screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's our end of our show. Listen, a lot coming up this week on Sportsnet. Starting 8 a.m. Are you laughing, Dobby?
I'm not.
Because I remember.
This is a 3-hour podcast.
Amazed I remembered. 8 a.m. Eastern, Monday morning. You may have missed this already if you're getting this on the way to work, but we'll be having the draw for the World Cup qualifying playoffs. Big day. Don't forget Soccer Central, Sunday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 1. The roundtable goes Fridays at 7 p.m. on, what channel is that? Is that Sportsnet World? Yeah?
Sportsnet
World. It does change for a bit right now as well. And, of course,
Learn your stations.
Champs League Tuesday and Wednesday. Coverage starts at 2:30, John?
I think there's
the early games.
I think there's a game in Russia on Wednesday, so noon.
Okay, noon. All right. Anyway.
So check your local listings
and
watch
UEFA
Soccer
Cup
Central.
Goes on. UEFA Cup. Europa League. Europa League goes on Thursdays. All right. So that's it. That's the first podcast. I don't think we've offended too many people.
J-Mo
maybe.
Nope, mine offended.
We're going to have to research the word twat.
This is the Soccer Central podcast, and we love it.